Private tutoring is something that families have turned to traditionally if they have concerns that their children may be falling behind. Perhaps you have concerns about your child over some gaps in learning that have been lingering after all the COVID lockdowns, or maybe you're concerned about ongoing teacher shortages. Other families take their children to tutoring to give them the best possible chance at getting into selective schools. But this can be a very expensive endeavour, and right now, any expenses carry an extra burden because of cost of living pressures. So how can families make sound decisions whether a tutor is providing value for money, and for those who can't afford one, what's the alternative? We're joined by Mohan Dahl. He is the CEO of the Australian Tutoring Association. Hello, Mohan.
Good morning, Ange.
Hi, and Christina Ho is Associate Professor of Social and Political Sciences at the University of Technology in Sydney. Also, she's the author of Aspiration and Anxiety, Asian Migrants and Australian Schooling. Mohan, people employ private tutors for a range of reasons, which we'll get to shortly. When do you think families should be seriously thinking about getting a tutor? What's the trigger point, in your opinion?
The trigger point is evidence that a child needs extra support, and that could come from the results of NAPLAN testing or observations by educators in mainstream schools or observations by people who are looking at a child, looking at developmental stages and identify that there's an issue with the child's development. So normally the first response and the earliest response would be a remedial response, and it would be prompted by some sort of comparison or some sort of benchmark that a child isn't meeting in terms of their performance, and that would be given by that evidence would be given by someone qualified to do so.
And then your advice is to first of all speak to the child's teacher at their school. Is that right?
Indeed, the parents are, and their circle are, often the best identifiers of issues with children first, and leveling with the child's teacher can have a significant effect in bringing attention to the child within the mainstream class. But it can also add to the picture. There may be something that a teacher observes that can give a context to how a child is performing, and can also give validation or otherwise to what a parent might expect at certain ages and stages. So that communication is crucial, and it should continue even if the family then progresses to take on a private tutor.
Christina, hello, welcome.
Good morning, Angela.
Hello. You've researched the reasons why certain parents, particularly migrant parents, might get tutoring for their child or children. Before we get into aspirations and desires, parents have to get their children into certain selective entry schools. Well, at least they want to. What are your thoughts on when parents should seek out tutoring, if they can afford it, of course?
Well, that's right. Obviously, there are traditionally what Mohan is describing, you know, tutoring was for remedial purposes to allow kids who might be struggling with something to catch up. But increasingly, families are using tutoring not to catch up, but really to get ahead. Mm. So they might be using it for acceleration or for exam preparation. And this is where the tutoring industry has really, you know, exploded in recent years, because especially in a lot of Asian migrant families, there is this real desire to get kids into academically selective schools. And increasingly, the entry has become so competitive that people are spending, you know, sometimes tens of thousands of dollars getting their kids tutored to prepare for the test 6 months in advance or even 12 months in advance.
Mm. And what do we know about how effective tutoring is in improving a child's academic abilities, Christina? What does the research tell us about what does and doesn't work with tutoring?
Well, because tutoring comes in so many different forms, if you look at the research internationally, it's very mixed. There is no overall kind of consensus that tutoring is either beneficial or not beneficial. Obviously, if tutoring is done well and it's well targeted and a child, you know, really needs it, then it can have benefits. What I'm talking about in terms of the test preparation tutoring is really quite a narrow form of preparation that is about exam technique, not about, you know, learning new content or new concepts or learning critical thinking. So I would be I am quite concerned about the amount of money that families are spending on this kind of test preparation tutoring, we don't actually have any research on how beneficial that is in terms of increasing a student's chances of getting into a selective school, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mohan, is there research that can tell us whether tutoring results in improved academic results for the students who are tutored?
Well, that's a really interesting question. Christina's right that this area of the market, she calls it tutoring, but I would classify it slightly differently as coaching, and coaching where there's tutoring for a particular purpose, and that purpose might be a transfer test like a selective schools exam. The results are very mixed. We do not know. My own experience would suggest the tutors who tutor in that sector of the market are probably not helping kids to become better learners. And not teaching them the kind of skills they need to be able to robustly, critically analyse questions. And in that case, it would imply the time and exposure element of tutoring, which someone can do outside of tutoring or coaching, may be helping kids get entry, but the actual teaching and thinking skills element, which is absent in most coaching, isn't. So, yeah, it's very mixed. But in terms of the reasons for tutoring, I mentioned remedial. Christina has rightly said there's this huge push in the coaching area. There's also parents wanting to take control over education. So in years of 10, 11 and 12, they say, I've got a limited opportunity for schools to make an impact on my child. So if I can spend discretionary income in that sector, then I'm going to feel like I've done my best. And then there's the one that no one really mentions, but is an overlay in part and also on its own. Everyone's doing it, therefore I will do it. And so we see these four distinct reasons for people taking on private tutors or going to tutoring businesses for support.
Christina, do you think there are downsides for kids who go to tutoring for their future academic ability, perhaps? Can they sometimes be a bit dependent on their tutors for their learning rather than becoming self-starters in their education?
Well, in my research, talking to teachers, sometimes teachers are worried that the students develop a certain way of interacting with their learning so that they're very caught up on getting the answer right. And so they're less willing perhaps to take risks in class because they don't want to get it wrong. So it really depends on the kind of tutoring that the students are getting. But, you know, if it's about, for example, getting a great test score or, you know, doing something really fast, sometimes that actually isn't teaching kids, you know, what they need to be successful learners independently. There's also just the stress and the amount of time that kids, and in my research, I've been dealing with primary school kids who are 10 years old and are going to tutoring sometimes multiple times a week. This is in the lead up to the selective school test that they do in year six. So you're talking about quite young children who are spending hours and hours, sometimes late into the evening. So their teachers report, and they report too, tell me that they're tired, and sometimes it's hard to stay awake in school. Sometimes they're bored in school because they've covered everything already in tutoring, and so there's nothing else for them to learn in school. So then there are actual spin-offs into the classroom, and if you've got a classroom where, you know, some of the kids, say a lot of the kids are going to tutoring, so maybe they're actually learning ahead of the curriculum, then that puts the teacher in sometimes a difficult position because she's got, say, a lot of the kids who are bored, who are disengaged because they've done it before, and then others who, you know, really need to learn the content for the first time. So it actually can make classroom learning a lot more fragmented.
And I wonder whether some parents feel sort of pressured by the actions of parents of other children to get their kids tutored. It becomes quite competitive, don't you think?
Yeah, and definitely I would agree with what Mohan has said about the pressure of other parents. I've interviewed quite a lot of Asian migrant parents who, you know, maybe have been quite, you know, content to let their kids, do schooling. But then they are in, you know, social media groups with other parents and everyone's talking about tutoring and which tutoring centre are you sending your kid for this or that subject. And there almost is this, sort of pressure from other parents that then cause, especially in Chinese, Indian migrant communities, I've interviewed parents who said, well, then I start to doubt myself about whether I'm doing, you know, the right thing for my kids, because everybody else seems to be sending their kids to tutoring and they don't want to be the only ones not doing it.
Yes. Mohan, as we mentioned earlier, this sector is unregulated, isn't it? It is a sector that involves minors, so tutors, I know, need to have a working with children check, don't they? What should parents bear in mind when they're looking for a tutor, when they first employ a tutor?
So you've raised a really interesting issue. Tutoring falls between education and commerce, and at the moment is regulated by commercial law under what we'd call the provision of a service. And that makes it extremely hard for a disgruntled consumer to understand their rights with respect to accountability. How do I know the tutor is doing what they said they would do? How do I know my child is safe? Now, you mentioned the Working with Children check, which is a legal requirement across all states and territories in Australia as one of the regulatory barriers to entry, if you like, or things that every tutor should have. Many don't, but they should have. So here you've got a bit of an issue, because increasingly I'm coming across service providers where a child has an emotional response to the tutor and they don't feel comfortable, and the tutor isn't skilled or trained enough in understanding kids and child safety to understand that this is actually a problem that they need to address through adjusting how they tutor. Instead, they say some anxiety is good, or a child should fit in, or a child needs to be more resilient. And herein lies the problem. We have a problem around child safety where a tutor can't even identify that the way they're tutoring is causing children stress. There's a problem around assessment. Who is doing assessments? When that impacts on schools, is it plagiarism? Who is actually doing the stuff that is making kids get marks in schools? And there's a host of other issues that impact on education but fall outside of the realm of commerce. So parents need to be really clear about who they're choosing, why they're choosing, and for what purpose. So they should say to themselves first, of course, are they a member of the ATA and do they abide by the industry code of conduct? And then they should ask, if not, why not? They should also say to a tutor, regardless of whether they're a member of the ATA or not, what program do you follow? How does it relate to school? What do you communicate with school teachers so that we can all work together for the best for my child? And things like, if you make a promise or you say that this tutoring will work, how do you measure success? And if it doesn't work, what do you do? And do you have a refund policy? And under what circumstances do you give refunds? So if parents take time to choose a tutor, to interrogate these sorts of questions, they'll get a very quick sense of whether tutors are accountable, honest and ethical in the service they provide.
Mm-hmm. And Christina, what's your advice to parents who might feel that the tutor services are not actually working for their children, things are not turning around? What would be the best approach there?
Well, I mean, this can be really fraught, because especially as students get older, sometimes families are sending kids to multiple tutoring centres, you know, in different suburbs, you know, driving all around town. And it can become quite an exercise in, you know, sort of picking certain tutors for certain subjects. Overall, I feel that, you know, the whole sort of reliance on tutoring has kind of exploded. It's kind of gone out of proportion. And I feel like we need to sort of rethink, you know, do we need this much tutoring for students? How can tutors actually respond to students' needs? And I know Mohan's association has been really active in trying to educate the industry, but you know, we just don't know what's happening in some of these tutoring centres. And I think that parents need to be really vigilant and, you know, relying on word of mouth, relying on what other parents are saying, is not necessarily the most, you know, foolproof method. I think that parents actually need to make their own decisions about what is best for their child, talk to their child about their experiences in the centre, and really, as far as possible, hold these tutoring centres accountable. You know, like they're charging a lot of money, and I just don't think that there is enough transparency and accountability at the moment.
And by the way, Mohan, do you have to sign up for tutoring? Do you need to sign contracts and that kind of thing?
People can either go week by week and, you know, it's a very informal arrangement. But typically businesses of the form that Christina's describing, they do charge high fees, you know, $1,000, $2,000 a term, often lock in parents for one, two, three terms at a time. And it's very hard then for a parent to back out, especially if they're dissatisfied. And then they give this ridiculous thing of a credit note when a child feels unsafe. Well, no family wants their child to go back using a credit note to a business that, you know, where someone's unqualified or doesn't have any accountability. So, yeah, we do have the same concerns that Christina has. We think the industry needs to be better understood, and probably there should be room for some sort of licensing where licensed tutors can be vetted and their qualifications and training can be made patent, and also any issues arising from consumers against those tutors can be made obvious to parents in a name and shame or some sort of public register. And I think that would bring a lot more accountability to the sector.
Great to have you both on. Thank you so much for your time, Mohan.
Thank you.
Mohan Dahl is the CEO of the Australian Tutoring Association. And thank you, Christina.
Thanks, Angela.
Christina Ho is Associate Professor of Social and Political Sciences at the University of Technology in Sydney. She's also the author of Aspiration and Anxiety, Asian Migrants and Australian Schooling.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.